Thanks for joining us on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. And so I'm going to jump right into it. It looks like most of us are familiar with each other, I think, by looking at the participants. And so if I could have a motion to approve the March 19th.
So moved, Lori Spielman.
Thank you, Lori.
Second, Kasia Percielo.
Thank you. Anybody have any suggested changes or edits? Don't see anyone jumping at that opportunity. So all those in favor as adopting the budget as presented, please say the budget. That's so you know where my head is. Adopting the minutes, please say aye.
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 Anybody opposed or abstaining?
This is Dawn Maslick. I was not present. I'm abstaining.
Okay, thank you, Dawn. Okay, thank you very much. Next item are reports. I do not have anything to say other than thank you very much for the great participation the last several meetings and appreciate many of you making additional time to join us. So for this meeting as well as the past meetings. And so I'm going to turn it over to Matt. Matt, what do you got for reports?
Thank you very much, Peter, and good afternoon, everyone. It's great to see you. Thank you for joining us today. So I have a couple of items, then I'll turn it over to Pauline and to Kim. So first, in the legislative front, been very focused on this House Bill 5056, the governor's bill on shared services. It's gone through a couple of iterations, and actually I've been working in collaboration with CCM and COST. We were a little bit surprised by the amendments that were made through the committee review process. So we were able to schedule a meeting with the administration and the co-chairs of the P&D committee, along with legislative attorneys. And we're continuing to work through that. I'm still optimistic at the end of the day. We'll have some legislation that is beneficial to us in terms of helping to promote shared services across the state. And I know that's actually an item we have later on our agenda when we get to the RPIP discussion. Next item I wanted to touch on, Peter, is our solid waste authority, our regional solid waste authority, Central Connecticut Solid Waste Authority. Several of you are our members. We held a couple of important meetings yesterday, the executive committee, as well as the full authority. And we have revised the bylaws and the ordinance, the enabling ordinance for CSWA, to make them less complicated. And we think that will assist us in our recruitment efforts as we reach out to other towns. Also very pleased that we're going to be getting a regional waste authority grant from the state. Want to commend Pauline and everybody else who worked on that in the amount of $570,000. We're still negotiating the scope of that with DEEP, but that is good news. And we'll be using that grant in part to help support an organics diversion project that we'll be working on in collaboration with CSWA, and something I think we can expand to the full CROG membership. So looking at how do we pull organics out of the residential and even the commercial waste stream. And then just two other things quickly, Peter. Automated traffic enforcement safety devices. Recall the committee's been discussing that off and on. CROG staff, we have developed a dedicated webpage, which we will share soon. And we are looking at the potential of procuring the services of consultants or vendors to make available to our member towns with respect to that technology. And then last but certainly not least, hopefully everyone received an invitation to our open house. We'll be able to introduce you to our new office space here at 350 Church Street in Hartford. We're really excited to be here. The move's gone really well, thanks to Pauline and other members of our team. So we're going to hold the open house on April 24th from 3 to 5 p.m. We will validate your parking, and hopefully many of you will be able to attend. So that completes what I have, Peter. Maybe we can turn it over to Pauline and Kim and then take questions in one block, if that works.
That works. Pauline?
I'm actually going to turn it directly over to Kim because we have RPIP already on the agenda, and that's sort of my big item. So I'll let Kim talk about treated road salt and our energy consultant.
Thanks, Pauline. So a couple of things. The treated road salt bid is going to be issued in June. You will all be getting a spreadsheet from me probably this week, looking for quantities. So if you can get that back to me by May 13th, that is going to be the due date for those. Remember, this is not a bid that allows for piggybacking. So please be sure to get me your quantities again, May 13th, those will be due. And I plan to issue that bid on June 6th. So that is treated road salt. Second thing I just wanted to make everyone aware of is that the CRPC recently issued an RFP for an energy consultant. We are looking to pull the reverse auction come fall for our electricity consortium. And we issued this RFP back in March. We have since reviewed the proposals we received, and we will be making a recommendation to the policy board at its April 24th meeting to authorize CROG to enter into a contract with Titan Energy for these services. So once we hopefully receive approval from the policy board, we will be working with Titan to reach out to our CRPC members and existing consortium members to see who is interested in participating in the upcoming auction that we will be holding in the fall. And the intent will be to contract with a new supplier come January 1st.
Great.
Happy to take questions.
Thank you, Kim. All right, any questions for staff at this point in time?
Peter, I have a sort of a question and a comment.
Please, John.
Regarding the organic waste, are you familiar with, there was that big article in yesterday's paper about Senate Bill, I believe, 191, which looks like it's moving towards making us do some specific stuff effective 2025. And then the second is, are you, Matt, at CROG at all, familiar at all with an organization called Divert, which is a nationwide organization? Dan Carter, the Director of Public Works, and I met with them virtually yesterday at their request. They are working quite extensively in organic waste diversion. They have operations in, big operations in Massachusetts, but also in out west as well. Have primarily been working with food distributors, large supermarket chains and whatnot for the recapture of unused food and distribution to those in need of food, but also the diversion of organic waste to be reprocessed. I suggested that they contact you to see whether or not we wanted to do anything regionally. They've just started to reach out to municipalities nationwide, but they sounded like a fairly interesting organization, and they have a significant facility right over about 2 hours away from us in southeastern Massachusetts that they're going to make available for tours if anyone wants to go see them. But they're Divert, and hopefully you'll hear from them. If not, we can follow up with them. But I guess in the short term, what do we know? What are we doing about Senate Bill 191?
So we are aware of the bill, John, and we recently met with Deep Staff to see whether or not that legislation could pose any conflict for our pending organics diversion project. And Deep Staff didn't think so. They're actually very supportive of our efforts. Interestingly, the person heading this up at Deep is Mike Looney, recently served as the Director of Public Works in Hartford. So it's great to have someone with a municipal perspective working at DEEP in that role. And we plan to approach the organics project. We're going to start off with an RFI, a request for information, so that we can better learn the scope of what's out there, what's available, the realm of what's possible, so we can get more educated ourselves. And then we would likely follow that up with a more specific RFQ and RFP. So it's going to be a very deliberative process. I was not familiar with that organization, DIVRT, which you mentioned. We will certainly look that up. And I also wanted to acknowledge Fred Presley, who's joined us. Fred is CSWA's new chair and is doing a very able job in that role.
Super. Thank you, man. I just a Bloomfield thing, Kim. Could you add Dan Carter to the invite list for these meetings? The Director of Public Works in Bloomfield.
And Dan has been good about attending the CSWA meetings, John.
Good. And I think he'd benefit, and I told him that, would benefit by be joining these meetings and would have stuff to offer.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Anybody have any other questions for Matt, Pauline, or Kim? Before I forget, Matt, maybe we can have a conversation about having at one of our upcoming meetings, having the Solid Waste Authority. Maybe Fred Company can do a quick little overview of, for those of us who are not recently re-engaged with the authority, just as part of the membership pitch.
Yeah, I think we'd welcome that very much.
Absolutely. Okay. Again, very informal, just jump on in case I don't see anybody's hands. Next item is to hear a little bit about what our towns are doing, particularly with some kind of best practices, new ideas, new innovations. And so we're kicking this little series off with Plainville. And so we have, Andy is with us this afternoon, and I think he may have one or two folks to help him, but I know they're working on a pretty small shoestring operation there, and so looking forward to hearing some of their efforts in social media. So I'm going to turn that over to Andy directly, if you don't mind, Andy.
Yeah, that sounds good. Thanks, Peter. Thanks for the introduction, and thanks for giving us the opportunity to present on what we're doing with social media here in Plainville. I'm going to share my screen. We have a little bit of a presentation, but I'm also joined by our part-time office assistant / social media coordinator, Amanda Gilbride. You've been with us for...
Since end of November,
yeah. So a couple months, we've done a lot since Amanda's joined the team, but Amanda has a great background. She's a small business owner in Wallingford. She does the social media content for their company, and she's been able to transfer a lot of her skills to the town as well, which has been a huge help. So I'm going to pull up the presentation, and we could kind of just jump on in a couple slides, and then we can do some questions and whatever you guys have.
I'll just chime in, Andy. Amanda, yep. You can definitely tell them, you guys are all over the place. Great job.
Oh, thank you.
That's awesome. Yeah, thank you. So do you guys see the screen all right?
Yep, okay. We're good.
Perfect. So thank you again for letting us talk about kind of what we're doing with social media here in Plainville. I think it's really exciting. I know each of our towns have varying experience and different degrees of use when it comes to social media. When I started with Plainville about a year and a half ago, we had a Facebook account. That was pretty much it. We have a feature where if you post something to our website, it'll automatically post to the social media account as well. We didn't really get a lot of interaction or engagement with those posts. They weren't really interesting to look at. And overall engagement and interactions with the town account was pretty low. So when I started, one thing we wanted to work on was just making the Facebook account much more interesting to look at, have a variety of content, make it much more active. And we also added an Instagram account as well. So we had a Facebook account we were already working with. We added an Instagram account, and that's, you know, kind of where we started there. And as I had mentioned, it was really just myself working on social media when we started. And obviously that's kind of one component of my job. There are many others. So it was tough to kind of maintain and meet the demand that social media has. So over time, we've built what you see on the screen here, which is our kind of our communications and social media team. So on the far left, you see Amanda. That's who's joining me today. She's our social media coordinator. Just a little bit about that position. We don't have a communications office in the town. We had a part-time office assistant position here in the town manager's office, and we always struggled to fill the position. And so when it had gone vacant, we had brainstormed, the town manager, Mike Paulus, and I had talked about, okay, well, how do we build this position into something that could possibly help us with social media as well, and maybe make it a little bit more attractive to, you know, people who are interested in that type of work. And so we created this part-time, you know, we just changed the title, changed the job description, added the social media component to it. And we had some great applicants, and Amanda was one of them. We are really happy to have her on boards, and it's turned out really well. So there's myself, Mike Paulus, the town manager, Hal Hauberger, who's our economic development coordinator. He's great with building connections with our businesses, as we'll get into. That's kind of a component of what we're trying to feature on our social media. And then Sarah Tomzik, she's a resident in town. She's a really excellent content creator. And we've been working with her to help develop some of the reels and video content that we've posted to social media. So in this presentation, I just want to talk a little bit about why social media, what our objectives and goals are with the town of Plainville, talking about selecting the right platforms, the target audiences, creating engaging content, the effective posting schedule, how we measure success and how we kind of modify our plan based on the different measures that we have, and then how do we engage with our followers and how do we build new followers. So when talking about social media, why social media? The number one reason, it's free. So Plainville, we don't have a lot of money dedicated to communication and for branding or promotion or marketing and communication. So social media is a great opportunity to leverage something that is at no cost, and people already are on it. It's just a matter of getting them to follow your page. So that was a big driver as to why we chose to do social media. And then the space itself allows us to build awareness around our programs, around different initiatives, any type of announcements or advisories we need to put out, you know, and then just build goodwill with businesses in town and other community groups as we showcase them. So we can showcase different parts of the city in the town, different events we're doing. We can engage our stakeholders more effectively. It's another way to reach out to people rather than maybe like an email or face-to-face. We get to build this other connection. And then we hope that in the long term, too, it can help spur economic development by showcasing businesses or maybe even enticing businesses to want to move to Plainville by showing them, hey, this is a great community. Look at everything we have that's going on. We'd be happy for you to join us. And so our main objectives are to engage members of the community, engage them with exciting posts, and also, you know, some type of conversation. We want to spread positive information about the town, factual information about the town. Oftentimes, you know, those separate Facebook groups that exist in Plainville, we have Plainville Talks. There's a lot of misinformation that gets circulated in those groups. So we hope that this is one way for us to dispel that type of misinformation and focus on, well, what factually, what's the town doing? Like I mentioned, create awareness and economic growth, and then ultimately brand and market the town of Plainville, get people excited to live in Plainville, maybe even move to Plainville, and then businesses as well, wanting to stay in town, move to town, you know, make Plainville their home.
So when we first started off, we kind of
decided. If I may interrupt, your slides aren't
advancing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We see the top, the title slide. Oh, now there we go. We're on the, you're on the second, you're on slide six now. Yep, we see.
Okay, is that all right?
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, sorry about that. Not sure why that happened.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. So when we first started, we kind of had to decide which platforms we were gonna use. Like Andy said, the town already had a Facebook page. And then when Andy started, he created an Instagram and a LinkedIn as well. But you know, there's other platforms such as YouTube, TikTok, et cetera. So we kind of had to decide which platforms were best for us. Obviously we continued to use Facebook since we already had the account and a decent following. In our experience, we find that Facebook does best with informational content. So people, you know, go to Facebook to look at current events or things going on in the town. What we have found with Instagram is that people use it for information and entertainment. And this is kind of, you know, there can be overlap, but like food does really well on Instagram. There's a lot of foodies. There's a lot of people who are just kind of looking to scroll and numb their minds. So, that's Instagram. And then LinkedIn, you know, is obviously for professional purposes. And nothing was really getting posted on the LinkedIn, I think, when we first started. And now we're trying to post every day. And we'll get into what we're doing with the manager's minutes and Mike, the town manager's own personal LinkedIn.
Yeah, Mike's really excited about his LinkedIn account. If you guys follow Mike, he's very proud of it. So definitely give him a like and a follow. He'd be very appreciative. We have a little competition going right now. I have more followers than he does, so yeah, moment of pride for me. So our target audience, this is something we kind of wanted to hone in on, just to make sure that what our messaging was, it was clear, and that we knew who we were trying to reach. So obviously it's the people in Plainville, people associated with the town of Plainville, so people who come to work here in town or oftentimes use and frequent our businesses, people who are considering to move here, and then businesses as well, as I had mentioned, looking to move here as well.
So, you know, kind of first things first is what kind of content do you create? And this is really where you have to make sure that you're creating content that people want to engage with. Currently, we're covering something called Local Business Spotlight. So every Thursday, we kind of highlight a local business in Plainville. We do a manager's minute, like I was saying before. This is where Mike speaks for 1 minute about a topic in the town. So it could be something going on at the senior center or the airport, and then kind of presents to the people of Plainville. So we want to make sure that we have topics that people actually want to engage with. The second is format. So, you know, choosing between image or video. Currently, video is king of content. And so we really see this on Instagram more than anything, that our reels do a lot better than pictures. However, carousels, like the slides, also do well. So just making content engaging, so video and carousel images. We also do Canva, and if Andy, you want to talk about, you know, your experience and how you created those templates to begin with.
Yeah, I'm not sure which communities here use Canva. It's a great tool. They have a free version. There's a paid version as well, and I didn't discover this till later on, but municipalities are eligible to participate in their nonprofit free version, so you can get access to the pro content by mentioning that you are a government entity. So we have access to all of the material just by being a town, and it's been great because I'll show pictures of a couple of our posts that we've done, but it's been just really easy to design things on there, social media content, but even outside of social media, flyers and things that we do for a town. It's just a really great resource. It's not as challenging to use as like maybe Adobe Illustrator or design or InDesign would be, kind of intuitive. So I think it's a great resource if you're not using it and you're looking to create some type of interesting and engaging content.
And before I started, Andy did a really good job at creating templates, which it turned out to be really useful in the future because, for example, say there's a traffic alert, Andy had already created a template in Canva for a traffic alert. So you almost just have to plug and chug, like if it's on East Main Street today, maybe it's on I don't know, some other street tomorrow. So it's easy to use if you have those templates in place. And we'll do that with job postings as well. And then tone of voice, this is important because, you know, I could go on vacation and Annie might have to, you know, use social media for the week. So just making sure that we stay consistent throughout the department. And I don't have the notes up, but, you know, we wanted to make sure that we were being professional, but we were also being educational and entertaining. So, you know, take yourself seriously, but not too seriously, because at the end of the day, it's Instagram and you're showing food and, you know, fun things to do.
Yeah, definitely. And the slides are advancing still, right? So you see, okay, great. So I appreciate Amanda mentioning about kind of the templates that we've made. It was kind of out of necessity in the beginning because I didn't have a lot of time to create maybe original content every time there was like a traffic advisory. So these are some examples of some of the templates we've created and that we've used. On the left-hand side is a news release when the town of Plainville made top 50 places to live with lowest cost of living. You know, something like that is really quick and easy to get out. Picture of the town, quick news release. And then on the right side is an example of kind of a weather advisory. Traffic advisory would be a similar format. When there's the extreme cold weather protocol or extreme heat during the summer, having something like this that goes out that kind of grabs someone's attention and has all the information there that they need. A couple other examples on the left is just open burning policy. We'll probably post something like this soon as people start having bonfires in town. And then on the right side, obviously job recruitment is something that we all face and something that's challenging to all of us. So trying to make, you know, showcase positions that we're hiring for. On the right side is a job posting for a bookkeeper in our finance department. So we kind of highlight the range, the benefits, the hours, and just a really brief summary of what the job is. And we do this for any of the jobs we post here in the town, sometimes even on the Board of Education side as well.
So here are two examples of reels that we made. Let's see if we could play the first one.
Yeah, I'm going to try to play them. Hopefully you guys could hear it.
POV, it's the holiday season in Plainville, Connecticut.
And then the second one is a restaurant that we went to, Pagliacci's. If you want to play that as well.
In the mood for some delicious Southern Italian food? Well, we have the place for you. Pagliacci's, located in Plainville, Connecticut, is the place to be. Since the 80s, Pagliacci's has been spicing up their menu with all things Italian by incorporating seasonal dishes to fan favorites, such as chicken parmesan and others. Though the food is the main contributor for customers returning, current owner Jane Capobianco expresses her idea of why Pagliacci's is still successful.
And hospitality, everything is fresh and made to order. People have come to expect a certain quality and know that they're getting a taste of Italy when they come here.
If you're interested in dining out at Pagliacci's, head on over to 333 East Street in Plainville, Connecticut.
Yeah, so hopefully you guys heard the audio there. We'll share the slides, and I could always share links to these as well if you're interested in. But those are kind of two examples of successful videos and reels that we posted. The one on Pagliacci's, which is an Italian restaurant in town, was one of our first business spotlights, which is something we try to do every Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what we've noticed also works is collaborative posts. So if you don't know what collaborative posts are on Instagram, you can collaborate with another account. And so your video will come up on your account as well as theirs. And so that's a great way to increase the following. And it seems like the algorithm favors collaborative posts. So effective posting schedule, we use a software called Basecamp. And this is a good way for us to all be on the same page about what's getting filmed on what day and what is, you know, getting posted on what day. So we kind of have an idea for all of us to make sure that we're on top of things.
And if I can just add to the Basecamp, the Board of Ed already pays for it, which is why we have access to it. Allows you to like project manage, share your schedule, share documents, but Google Docs or any type of shared platform like that would suffice. It's just kind of what we use, but it's nice to have one place to work off of.
Right. So timing matters. The Meta Business Suite, which I'll get into, they actually will tell you what time of the day and what day of the week is best to post, depending on when your followers are most active. So it's good to post during those times to really maximize the potential of the post. And then automation tools, we have Meta Business Suite. You can pretty much schedule a post through there. So say like your followers are most active at 8 p.m. on a Tuesday, but you're at home, you can just schedule it during the workday and then it will automatically post at that time. Other platforms have this kind of scheduler like LinkedIn. I don't think TikTok does. YouTube, I believe, does. Each one is different. And then measuring success. So we usually we use Meta Business Suite to track analytics. So that's another tool to use through there. And we can track analytics on Instagram and Facebook. And then for TikTok, LinkedIn, and YouTube, they all have their own analytics. We try to do this every 30 days, and then we'll kind of do a review every 90 days. If you do it every day, there might be too much fluctuation, but 30 days or 1 month is probably a good metric to track. And so then we've also created like an engagement policy because social media isn't just a forum. It's a platform that you can engage with people. And I think this is really the most important part. So we have to know how to respond to a variety of comments. And I'm sure you guys know this. There are people who will say great things about whatever you're posting. Then there are other people who are going to seriously complain. And then it can go all the way to there being wildly inappropriate, or there's trolls or spammers or whatever it is. So coming up with a strategy to know how to respond to different kinds of comments, whether that's, you know, heart reacting, commenting like thank you, or just straight up ignoring the post. And then obviously you get to the point where you might have to delete a comment, which you then have to, you know, document somewhere else to make sure that it's documented and then you're able to delete it.
Yeah, so one thing we do just on our end, just because we don't get too many really negative or profane comments, but things that are really like maybe lewd and stuff we definitely wouldn't want to have on our social media page, we have a policy to document those. So the name, the post, have a separate site so that when we delete it, if someone were to ask why their post was deleted or if there was any freedom of information request, we have access to that information. I know there's services that kind of do this for you, but they tend to be really expensive. So this is kind of our in-house policy, and we don't face this enough to have to deal with it regularly. So it's kind of working for us now, but it could evolve. And that's the end. I don't know where the last slide went, but the last slide said questions.
It had the QR codes too. Social media accounts.
Oh, bummer. But anywho, that's the end of our presentation. So I hope it was interesting, at least, if nothing else. And I appreciate you guys giving us the time. And thanks, Amanda. She's been a great help, and I'm grateful that she's on our team.
Great. Thank you very much, Andy and Amanda. Great to see that good work happening on such a small and resourceful group. So I think many of us are in the same boat, and so I think those are some good things that you highlighted. Any questions for either Andy or Amanda? I have a quick question. The Meta Business Suite, is that a cost to have to use that service, or is that just built into the tool?
No, yeah, it's just built into the platforms.
Okay.
Yeah, as long as it's not a personal account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing you'll want to note with the Meta Business Suite is with most of the social platforms, they have scaled back the amount of analytics that they will give you. So after 90 days, it does not keep your records. So if you're using Meta Business Suite to track, you have to make sure you screenshot or copy paste your information into an Excel document if you need to go back more than 30 or 90 days for your social metrics.
Yeah, that's a good point, Aaliyah. Thank you.
Thanks for adding that. Matt?
Thanks, Peter. Thank you, Andy and Amanda, for your presentation. Really appreciate your work. I've been following you guys along with Mike. And question, and I've seen some posts from Mike in this regard. Do you find as though your campaign is beneficial in terms of engaging with the community about, you know, critical items of town business, whether it's an upcoming budget referendum, an ordinance the council is considering, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a great point. Going? So, yeah, and I think, you know, ultimately we want to make engaging content and showcase businesses, but obviously the town, we have some really important information we want to share about public hearings or budgets and things like that. Recently in town, we just had a referendum on a new middle school project, and our social media presence and our social media campaign was a big component with sharing information on that. So we have seen, I think, a lot of success. We've received anecdotally very positive feedback from residents, other leaders in town, folks who probably weren't going to be exposed to, I don't know, like a tour of the middle school or fact sheets on what the middle school project was going to cover. These are the types of things that we've been able to get out there, and I think people have benefited from them.
Right. I think it's, you know, you always want to balance like the fun with the serious, and I think our social media presence does a good job with that.
Yeah. And people comment often as well on our social media posts with positive remarks. We've received direct messages as well. So I think people do appreciate it. And I think it's effective because just looking at like how many people share it or our posts will show up on Plainville Talks, that community group I was telling you about. And so just the reach that we can see, it gets so further than it would have if we weren't doing this. So just another avenue to promote some of the stuff we're working on. So I think it's been successful.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah. Good question.
Anybody else have any questions or thoughts?
I just wanted to say quickly. Sorry, guys, my image is delayed, so hopefully you can hear me good. I really like the tip about, you know, sharing and collaborating and making sure doing collaborative posts. I think that's something across the board as we think about our social content, highlighting what our other municipalities are doing. So I think that's a great tip, especially I wasn't aware of it, and knowing that it's posts like that are friendlier to the Facebook algorithm. So that's good to know. Thank you for that.
And Andy, maybe you and I can touch base later on at some point, but two areas that have been concerned for my team here are how do you handle the inappropriate postings, especially in light of some of the Supreme Court cases that are being outstanding, I guess, still haven't been ruled on, adjudicated completely, but that's the concern about how we all handle that and the whole right to free speech, but also the issue about any, as a word of caution on the referendums, making sure that you're keeping an eye on the state elections commission rules and regulations regarding being neutral and using different social media and other digital accounts there. And there's a few towns have run a little bit afoul of that, or at least have been accused of running afoul of that. So
yeah, I think those are good points. I'd be happy to connect on the just kind of the freedom of speech and Supreme Court cases going on, because that's pretty interesting to us too. One thing we were cognizant of in the middle school referendum was making sure that we were doing everything before the quiet period started. And then once it started, we pretty much stopped. We took a pretty conservative approach to just really date and time of the referendum, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
And we were working with a consulting team that helped advise us on that and the town attorney. But that's a really good point, because your social media posts aren't exempt from those regulations.
Right. So I mention that because I'm getting a lot of heat here, because we did not, we basically were ultra conservative when we recently had a referendum on a park project, and people in the community are kind of beating us up because, oh, we didn't know about the referendum. Why didn't you put it on social media? So it's that fine line.
It's a fine line. Yeah.
So. Well, thank you very much for sharing.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Great stuff. And as always, I'm sure you folks will be very happy to answer questions if questions pop in after the fact. So, Matt, I saw your hand pop up.
Sorry, I'm having trouble finding my mute button. That was just a little clap. That's all.
Oh, clap. Look at that. Cool. All righty. Again, thank you very much, Amanda, for joining us today and sharing some tips. All righty. Pauline, are you going to kick off up talking about the RPIP, or Matt? Who's going
to? Yeah, I'll kick it off, Peter, and then turn to Pauline. So, understanding we only have about 15 minutes remaining or so, wanted to at least kick off a looking for a good, honest conversation on our three RPIP grants. And we'd really like some good, solid input from the committee. So, as you all probably know, I think it was in 2022, correct, Pauline, that the state awarded us three grants under the Regional Performance Incentive Program, one in the area of building inspection, one in the area of assessment, and then one in the area of animal control. And we developed those applications very much in collaboration with this committee. You may recall, we conducted a survey to determine what our towns thought were the areas of need and where our members saw the greatest potential for shared services. So we used all of that to shape and prepare and submit those applications to the state. And we did receive three out of four applications were awarded. But we've really struggled to get those three off the ground. And we want to try to determine why. And if we do need to pivot a little bit moving forward, what are our thoughts and suggestions in that regard? Because Pauline has had some conversations with OPM. The last thing we want to do is turn the grant funds back in, right? And OPM doesn't want to see that either. So again, hoping we can begin a good, honest conversation on this topic today so that we can get your feedback so that we know how to move this program forward. Pauline?
So for just as a refresher for people who may not remember, is we have the three grants that we received was one for shared building official, one for shared assessment, and then one for shared ACOs. And as Matt said, we've had a little challenges in getting it off the ground in terms of interest, compatibility, availability with the building official. And the latest on that was that we, as some of you may know, we tried for trying to find a per diem building official so that towns could just buy in on an as needed basis. We actually did not get any candidates for that. And we recently went out with an RFP for an on-call sort of consultant to have people with credentials within their staff to do that. That may have some potential, but the flip side of towns participating in that is where we have where we're running into some issues. So we have one municipality who is definitely interested, but they're having union challenges, let's just put it that way, with regards to getting that over the line in order to be able to participate in the program. And then with regards to ACOs, our vision or thought was that this would be on a sub-regional basis, right? It would be two or three towns working together to share an ACO or multiple ACOs. And that appeared to potentially have traction in different sub-regions a couple of times, and then would fall apart at different stages. Some of it had to do with cost, some of it had to do with availability, some of it just had to do with coordination, I think. There is some effort in coordinating, right, these grants or something that's shared, and there was, I would say, a lack of willingness to coordinate. I think assessment has been the area where we've had the most challenges in terms of interest or just being able to find something that would work. And I have had a conversation with OPM, and their view is they do not want to take the money back. So and that's something that we're in agreement with. And so we'd like to just try to find something that might work, whether it's something creative, something that would be sustainable after the grants are over as well. So.
Pauline, can you mention the trainee idea? I'm sorry, Peter.
Yes.
I just want to get that.
Yeah, so one of the thoughts that we had is that we floated here in this group is the potential of a trainee, right, in terms of, because that's one of the issues in some of these areas is just having the bodies or people who are qualified. And I think with the trainee, it would require a modification with our agreement with OPM, but it would have to end in some sort of shared position, right? You couldn't have a trainee that just then starts to work for one of the towns. So that would be sort of the challenge there, but it is something that OPM would be open to.
Great. Thank you both for kind of recapping where we stand and highlighting some of the hurdles that you've identified. So I'm going to open it up to folks, what your thoughts are. As Matt said, he's looking for some feedback, and be it as frank as you would like it to be. So just jump right on in.
From the town of Canton, I know in the past, we were one of the ones who talked about the assessor and some of the concerns we've had with trying to find an assessor and availability and so forth. And it turns out we'll be back in that market again. We've had a consulting assessor for the last year and a half or so, and she's going to be moving on in May. So we're going to be back to the drawing board again, trying to find another part-time assessor. So if there's anything that we could, you know, work out with CROG or pursue this in any way, certainly we would be interested in talking to you about that. But, you know, I just find it kind of ironic, unfortunately, CROG, especially as it relates to the building officials, having the same issues we are. You know, it's hard to find qualified candidates out there. And, you know, especially for any kind of a municipal position that requires a license or you know, any kind of specialized training, that it there's only so many of them and you know, all fighting for the few that are out there. And, you know, when it comes to trying to find a building official, it sounds like you guys are in the same boat we were.
Thank you, Bob. From my perspective, I like the concept of the trainee model. I do think it is a issue of a pipeline type of issue, and at least in the building inspection and assessing areas. And if that, you know, from my view, if that is possibility to use some of this dollars to generate that, which ends up in a shared service arrangement. You know, for those who don't know, Windsor basically hired a full-time building inspector, and we've been paying him to go to class, the state the state course. So for basically for the last 6 months, or will be 6 months, we're paying that person to go to class 2 days a week and basically be a entry level inspector, which is really just shadowing. That's how we had to do it in order to get around that pipeline. I would love to have been able to share it with the community. Just didn't work out timing wise to build that collaboration. So something along that lines with the, you know, if OPM could be open to that, I think that would help. Again, I can't recall all how much money there was available for each of those buckets. Maybe a small beginning of a pipeline, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Peter, I'd like to emphasize another point that Pauline made. The positions we hire, or the people we hire utilizing these funds, do not need to be CROG employees.
Yeah.
You know, they can be employees of one of the participating towns, with the other towns paying a share of their salary and fringe. And actually, that's probably a preferred model, using an interlocal agreement for a smaller program. Because I know we have heard from some that maybe CROG's cost structure was cost prohibitive, which I guess surprised me a little bit, you know, thinking about the fringe rate that most municipalities have to contend with. But again, these folks don't need to be CROG employees.
I don't know, what are folks things? What are some of the hurdles that you see? Is it political? Is it timing? Is it just takes a lot of time to develop this, you know, relationships with, you know, like Bob, you've got an assessor, you know, years ago you folks shared with Canton. I'm not with Avon. And is it just a matter of timing and the right when that marriage can happen? I don't know.
Yeah, that certainly is part of it. You know, you need a vacancy and then a willing partner, you know, in the other municipality. And it doesn't always work out that way. I mean, we were one of the ones who looked at CROG's fee structure for the building official, and it did seem a little higher than what we were, you know, currently paying. So that was a little bit of a hindrance. But, you know, and talking about training somebody, that's great, especially when it comes to a building official. But I mean, last time I checked, I get a law degree quicker than I can become an assessor. And the process for that is ridiculous, yep. At least in my opinion. And, you know, I don't know if it's that way in order to limit the amount of assessors that are out there to, you know, create better marketability, but it does take a long time. And that's part of the issue. The last one we had was an admin in my office that we actually trained and sent to school and how to become a trained assessor and worked out well. But that's what we had to do last time to get an assessor.
Yep.
Hmm.
So let's see. So those are similar things that we've been, a few of us been on the task force at the state level and, you know, around the building official, same thing, Rob, Bob, it was just how fast can they, you know, do the training. And I've heard that certainly from the assessors I've got. So the other part, I don't know, Matt, maybe it's just these three, they're already in the hopper, but I think when you look at other RPIP grant opportunities, assuming the state's going to offer those, maybe we just need to do, when we submit something, we got to have something more firmer in place, which that legwork already done.
Yeah, that's a fair point, Peter.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are struggling right now to make something happen, but at the same time, we don't always know when. I believe right now our PIP is on a rolling acceptance of applications now compared to several years ago when it was once or twice a year.
Yeah,
my understanding. So,
and this governor is very supportive. You know, it's something he wants to see. I see Megan has her hand up, Peter.
Hi, Megan.
Hi. So this is probably not the advice probably that you're looking for from Tolland. We have a building official and he's quite competent. He does a great job. We are not in a position where we need to share a service, but we do have something that works really well for us. We have an agreement with some of our neighboring communities where we can cover if somebody's on vacation or if there's a shortage. And we have just sort of an informal sort of agreement that we don't compensate necessarily unless there was a significant shortage. It's sort of like a gentleman's agreement. So if you don't take advantage of the amount of time and everybody sort of works equally. So while my building official is on vacation, we have somebody who covers. And I think our building official covered for a good period of time in Stafford when they were short on a building official. And that has sort of been working. And I don't know if that's useful information at all.
Well, I think it is. And those types of mutual aid type agreements, Megan, are very common, and we recognize that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Andy, I see your hand raised.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. Megan, I think that's great. Plainville has something similar with the surrounding towns, I think Southington and Bristol, for when our building official is on vacation and not able to perform that function. But there's still so much going on in town where we still need some type of part-time assistant building officials. So Plainville's still interested in it. I think for us, it's just a matter of, we're even happy to host one. I think it's just trying to find a qualified individual who we can pay a salary that's not gonna be more than the building official we pay now, which I think is still a very reasonable pay. So that's kind of the challenges on our end, but I'm open-minded. I know we're still interested and we still very much would need the additional support. Mm.
Anybody else have any thoughts or questions? I know it's frustrating for Pauline and staff to try to pull this together. Part of me thinks it's a combination of the availability of folks in those professions, as well as timing and the ability to find a willing partner that's somewhat, have someone travel all the way from the east part of the region to the west part of the region to split a job 20 hours a week. That in itself is a challenge, even though you might have two willing, needing partners. So, Matt, any final words on this one?
Just in terms of to clarify next steps on this one. So here's a suggestion. If Canton is interested, you know, why don't we pursue that offline with Bob, and maybe there's an adjoining community like East Granby or someone who would be interested as well for the assessor piece. For the building code official, really think the trainee option is probably the best option for us. Again, if we can find a community with an experienced building official who's willing to host and be a bit of a mentor for a trainee, you know, I'd like everyone to think about that. That could be a good avenue there. And then with respect to animal control, I know we had made some progress with Wethersfield and some other towns. I think we ran into some budget challenges, but hopefully we're able to resuscitate that in the coming year. Does that make sense, Pauline and Peter?
I think it doesn't. I'm not sure, Matt. One thing on the animal control, I know there's a state law that's out there that says a community, I think, of over 25,000 needs to have a full-time position, ACO. I think that's the number. I think it's 25,000 population. So that may be a hurdle that's floating out there.
If we get this House Bill 5056 through, we'll take care of that.
Good. All righty. Yeah, I think that sounds right, Matt, in terms of next steps.
Good.
So, next item, municipal information sharing. All I can say is that if anybody has any way to get through a revaluation implementation, I'm all ears. It's not going to be a fun time in the town of Windsor this June, and maybe hopefully be done by Labor Day, who the hell knows? Anybody else have anything else? Hopefully everyone is hanging in there budget-wise. Sounds like the state's, God knows what the state's going to do with their budget. Guess we just count on what we're getting this year and use that as our budget. All right.
I think Megan has her hand up, Peter.
Sorry, Megan, I was looking at the other screen.
Oh, that's okay. At our last meeting, and I apologize, I forgot now who had come on and talked about it. Somebody was reaching out to OPM, I believe, about the STEEP grant assistance agreements, and I didn't know if there was an update, if that person is on the meeting or if they had any update, because I know we're also still looking for our assistance agreement.
Yeah, I did. I did reach out to Martin Heft, and someone from his office got back to me and let me know that they're in the process of, it sounds like, trying to outsource the work. And so it's taking quite a while. And that's all I have. Outsource the administrative oversight, that is.
Oh, Mr. Coleman, just go back to the UDAG days, right?
Yes.
Just get a per capita cost and go with it.
Yep.
So, all right. Anybody else have anything else under that? Otherwise, looking at future agenda items, we know at some point we want to talk about the stormwater management. There's some conversations happening at a couple of different levels with that. Earlier we talked about solid waste, maybe having the solid waste CSWA come in and talk a little bit about what their plans are and bring everyone up to date on what next steps might be there. Anything else that we might be able to put on the table for future thoughts, ideas people have?
Peter, we did talk internally about bringing Titan to a meeting. We will, according to Kim, whenever we have a new consultant on board for CRPC, our new vendor, mm-hmm. we occasionally bring them to municipal services.
So is that just related to they're only being hired to do for the energy, for the electricity, the quote-unquote consortium?
Correct.
That's their service. So that would be probably in, from a preparation perspective, that no later than the September meeting, because we take July and August off, don't we?
So I would actually recommend maybe the May meeting, because if we are going to do the reverse auction in the fall, that would be, we would be targeting September. And before we do the reverse auction, we have to collect all the information from the towns in terms of their accounts, what, you know, the kilowatts, yep. that their usage and et cetera. So
Either this meeting in May or another separate individual meeting for that's just focused on the electricity. Sounds like we'd have to do that timing wise.
Yeah.
Okay. All righty. If there's nothing else, then I appreciate all of you folks taking time and hope you get a chance to sneak outside for at least a few minutes this afternoon and enjoy the warm weather before it gets back to our normal New England spring. So, all righty, folks, thank you very much. Thanks again, Andy, for the presentation.
You got it. Take care, everybody.
Take care.
Thanks, folks. Appreciate it. Thank you, Peter.
Bye-bye.